Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Suzanne Gold Smith is a mother, creative, and survivor from New York. Her ability to transcend tragedy and prevail after heartache is a defining characteristic apparent in every single one of Suzanne's endeavors. However, her personal journey took a very dark turn after she was allegedly stalked and sexually assaulted by a private investigator. The event would launch her down a precarious legal path and an onslaught of efforts to seek justice. All that continues to come next in Suzanne's battle is a testament not only to her personal strength, but also to what the criminal justice system requires of victims. The Broken Cycle Media team is extremely grateful for Suzanne's time, energy, and the advocacy she is curating by sharing and bringing awareness today.
My name is Suzanne Gold. When I got married, it became Smith. So now I'm Suzanne Gold - Smith. I live in Long Island. I have 3 children, 3 grandchildren, and a 4th one on the way. My oldest is 31 and my youngest is 17. I'm a loving person and I'm honorable. That's very important, to be honest. I grew up in Queens with my parents and my brother, who unfortunately passed away at 25. So I'm technically an only child. We grew up in Bayside. I went to day school. I graduated and met my first husband. I had 2 children. A few years after we divorced, I would say about 5-6 years later, I met my husband, who I'm married to now. I was about 30. He came in the office I was working at. I was finishing my degree. We were talking and one thing led to the other and we began dating. It was also his second marriage. His wife had previously passed away from breast cancer. Everyone was very young at the time. My kids were 9-10 years old. His kids were only, one was 3 and one was 9 months or so. So they were fairly young. We had a lot of support and help because his wife had passed away. We got married. I was 33. Shortly after, I had a stroke. I had an aneurysm. It was called an ABM, an anterior venous malformation. It was something I was born with, but went undiagnosed. When it ruptured, I was 20 weeks pregnant with my son. I ended up needing emergency surgery. It required 2 surgeries, lasting about 16, 20 hours. I was in a coma for a short period of time. A week and a half later, I came to. Little by little, I had to gradually take care of myself and try to relearn how to walk, talk. I still have issues with balance. Walking far distances also could be challenging. I had to relearn how to do everything, basically, including taking care of my healthy, thank God, newborn child at that time. I had the aneurysm in January and he was born in June. So 4 months later, I had given birth. So I wasn't quite myself for a long time because I wasn't able to do the things I normally did. I enjoy singing, dancing, going out, being a parent and doing all those activities with my children. And I just couldn't do it, especially with a newborn. It was very, very, very challenging. It took about 6, 7, 8 months of intense therapy. I had children that would help feed the newborn. My mother, my father, they helped me a lot. Even though my children went to school full time, during the day, I was hardly ever alone. Someone was always there to help me and help my son. Everyone came to my aid. It was really nice to see. I can only say the best of things of everyone helping and my child too. It was a long process, but little by little, my hair grew back. I was suddenly able to walk and carry my child. I was able to go back to the gym, do my physical therapy, and I became more independent. My son was in school full time, and I was able to really focus on getting back to myself and trying to heal as best as possible. It was a tough few years for everybody involved, watching me go through what I went through, and I'm sure I was not happy going through it. And of course, that was a very big part of healing, having people help you, which unfortunately, as I'll explain later, I wasn't faced with. I didn't have the support I had this time around. About 2017, my husband and I were going through a very contentious divorce, may I say. It was a custody case as well. And my husband's matrimonial attorney suggested hiring a PI firm. They were hired by my husband's attorney at the time to refute some claims I had on disability. When his matrimonial people hired this firm, it was reputable. He understood it to be, everything was okay with this firm. They used the firm constantly. So he felt secure using them. They were hired for the purpose of really gaining access into my everyday life, taking pictures and submitting them into the lawsuit that we had, the divorce. At that point in time, I lived in a residential area. So it was safe to assume if someone is in their vehicle all day watching your home, that it's a PI. At first, I would think, oh, maybe it's a hitman or someone dangerous. And it was horrible. They followed my every move. I would say 7, sometimes 11 people at one time. Sometimes as few as 2, depending on the day. They would constantly follow me into anywhere I went, whether it be family, friends, the supermarket, take pictures of me. I have a picture, no joke, in my divorce decree that I went and bought nuts at a store. A lot of the pictures they had taken over those years were manipulated into their own narrative. For instance, if I visited my 29-year-old cousin, I was now a cougar who's dating this man. Well, that man's my cousin. Every single move I made was twisted. If I was stumbling because I'm off balance from the AVM, right away, oh, she's in a drunken state. She can't walk straight. It was so nerve-wracking that they would have to follow me all the time, let alone take pictures. Then they would put the GPS tracking device under my vehicle. They would pay off the gas attendant to get my credit card number so that they would know my credit card usage or the amounts I was spending. They would take a picture of the cash register. They would recycle videos of me from 4 months before and then say, oh, she went bowling today. Here's the video. If they lost me, they would use a refurbished video photo and they would present that to my husband's attorney. They would charge him so much for all this legwork because they said that I would be evasive and they would need more investigators. I had called the police dozens of times. I would say out of the 20 calls I made and the dozens of police reports, there was nothing that they can really do. I would call the police and they would come to that location. They would go to the PI's car and one of the PIs would flash a badge. They came to me and they said, everything's fine, everything's good. They would at one point tell me not to even call them anymore because it was wasting their time. Because I kept calling that whole 2-year period, I kept calling until they told me that. And I said, okay, they're not doing anything. I continued with the DA, with the New York Department of State. I went to the New York State Attorney. I told the courts I was going through it. Nobody wanted to hear it, let alone knowing he's a former detective. I feel that they all stuck together. That was my opinion. So it was a constant everyday thing to deal with them about 2-3 years, 24/7. Sometimes they would stop for a few months at a time, but that was not the case in 2018 when this unfortunate circumstance happened. In late 2017, one of the investigators, his name is Michael Green at the time, I did not know his name, but he introduced himself as Joe, and he served me with some other papers, part of my divorce. There was almost a head-on collision the day before this happened. I called the police. Once again, the police let him go. I begged the police. I said, keep them all here, but get rid of this one guy, please. He's the one who's been chasing and tailgating me. He's been going right front, left of my vehicle, right, front, left of my vehicle, back of my vehicle. He was so aggressive. He would follow my friends home. So I had begged the police officer, please, I almost killed myself for him. We almost went head on. And the police officer did not do a thing. He didn't even have the decency to come over to me and tell me that he's letting them go. I was distraught. This guy, Joe, Michael Green, he witnessed this. He knew that I was crying because I was in my car for about 20 minutes, contemplating different ways of either escaping them, leaving the country. Maybe that would be one of my plans. And then I thought of, unfortunately, hurting myself and ending it all. I just sat in my car for 20 minutes thinking about what I could do to stop this because nothing was helping me. Sure enough, a few hours later, I got served with these papers, and Joe, he's the one who served me. My sister was with me, my half-sister. We were staying at my stepmother's house. She was there to listen to this guy, Joe, serve me and suggest that I should become friends with the PIs. I should look at them as my friends, bodyguards, and protectors. I should give them a heads up on where I'm going, what I'm doing for the day, because they didn't want to lose me. That was a very big part of the PI investigation. He really gave me an out. I didn't have to do the two things I thought of doing in that car. He gave me a better option. Just give us your whereabouts ahead of time and we'll be your friend. So I agreed because what else could I do? Nothing was working. Nothing was happening. The day after he served me and I made this agreement with him, I right away told the PIs where I was going. I would drive slower. I would not evade them like I normally would try to do. I would let them catch up to me. If the light was turning yellow, I would make sure to wait. It was no longer me trying to get rid of them. And little by little, everyone just came over to me, asked where I was going that day and for my schedule. If I would go to the gym, they had gym memberships as well, and they would go into the gym when I worked out. Whatever it was, they always came in wherever I went. There was no privacy. If I went away with my father to the Bahamas on a cruise, they were on the cruise with me. I had to be this good girl and make sure that every move I made was good, that everything I did was pleasing for them. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little emotional. They became friends with my friends. They were friendly with my mother, my family, my children. They would make me pose for them. I would pose for pictures. They really didn't have much to report, I would think, because what am I doing? I'm swinging my grandchild on a swing at the park. I felt if I gave them my schedule and I told them ahead of time where I was going, I would have a smile on my face, I would be okay with them, that they wouldn't be as aggressive with me. Sure enough, in the year of 2018, the atmosphere was less tense. It was much better when I became friendly with them. I noticed a big difference in what they would show as pictures and what they would say. The dynamics of the investigation changed at that point. So coercive control is, in essence, what was going on. One of my friends at the time, she was having an affair with one of my investigators. They would have an intense relationship throughout this time. And then a few others also of my friends had relationships too. It was basically very unusual, the circumstances involved here. But whatever they needed me to do, I did. I didn't know it would require any physical or sexual acts. It wasn't like that in the beginning. But in March of 2018, for a birthday weekend, my friend suggested going away to Connecticut. We went away for a weekend. The guy she was with, one of the PIs, was there as well, sleeping there for that weekend. The other one was this Michael Green, my friend. She wanted to go to a concert, and I ended up having to sit next to this guy, Green. At that point, he started rubbing up against my leg and putting his hand on my leg, and I slid away, not wanting him to know what I was doing. I made sure to not get him upset. One thing led to the other, and 2 months later, in May, the incident occurred, so I get a little upset when I have to relive it. My friend and I were driving. It was about 11:30-ish in the night. He was parked in a shopping center, and she had noticed him. She knows he's friends with her lover. She wanted to ask him questions because he was married, and she wanted to know if she should end the relationship or continue it. She spoke to him about their relationship briefly. He said, let's continue in the back of this parking lot so we're not visible to the public. We drove into the back of the parking lot. He said, come on in the car. We went inside. It was me, my friend, and Green was in the front driver's seat. My friend asked if she can go and get vodka at my house. Now, I live a couple of blocks off. I said, okay, go ahead. So she ended up going to my home, picking up the vodka. She brought it with 3 Red Solo cups, maybe 5 minutes later. And she started to pour all of us a drink. After about 5-10 minutes, we both had to use the restroom. I left the remaining liquid that was in my cup, and I went out with her to use the bathroom. And we came back in the vehicle. I finished the remaining sip or two, and then she poured all 3 of us a second cup, but not very high. Enough that I knew I could drink it. I was okay. When I came back and had that second drink, I only had about a sip or two of it. And I would say about 10 minutes after, everything stopped. I don't remember anything after that. I just remember her last words. She said, do you want me to go home? I'll take your car. I remember her leg out of the car door. I don't know how much longer later, I just remember a light above my head shining. And I remember trying to say something, and Green was on top. The words wouldn't come out, and I went back into that unconscious state. I don't remember anything after that until about 4 in the morning. He drives me home, where I guess my friend was because she was staying with me. She had locked the top lock, so I couldn't get into the house. I remember getting out of the vehicle. I fell onto the sidewalk. I don't recall getting up. I don't know how I got up. There were stairs connected to my house. He's next to me, this guy Green. I'm trying to open the door and I can't get in. He's tapping at the window because she slept downstairs. She got up eventually and opened the door. I don't remember anything really from that point on, except for the next morning when I awoke and found my urine-saturated pants on the floor. I was completely naked. I don't know at all what had happened at that point. Nothing. All I know is there was a flash of light above my head for a split second, and that was all I remember. I did think maybe I was either roofied or I drank too much alcohol. I was blackout drunk. I didn't know the difference between the two. And when I saw the urine on my clothes, I also suspected maybe I had a seizure. I had a brain aneurysm. So I'm thinking seizure related. I just did not know what could have possibly happened during that time. I know I wasn't there physically. I may have been, but not mentally. But I did call a few friends of mine. They all recommended I go get tested or go to the police precinct and report the incident. But of course, police is out of the question. I have about 6-7 people out there right now. If I go to a police station or to a hospital, it's going to get out and something's going to happen to me. They all carried weapons. They all know my family and friends, where everyone lives. I'm not messing with them. I'm just going to assume I was blacked out or roofied and I'm fine. I'm okay now. I remember just recuperating that whole day. Later that evening, we had a charity event. I ended up going with my friend. Of course, Green and the investigators were outside. Green came over to us. We were standing by the bar area. He had said, "Are you okay? Everything okay?" Small talk. And I said, "Yes, but I'm quite embarrassed because I had pee all over myself and I didn't remember anything." That's when he said, "We did everything. And you consented." I think that was what threw me off, that word. Who uses that word consented, except in legal terms? Why are you saying that? How could I have consented? I couldn't even talk. I said, "Oh, what was the flash of light?" And he said, "I used a flashlight app on my phone because it was dark." So I just left it at that and told my friend. My friend who was staying with me said, "Oh, well, it could be the vodka. It's a strong alcoholic beverage, and I poured you a lot. So maybe it was that." Till this day, I probably will never know, but I know I was not there. Physically, I was. Not mentally, not emotionally, never. I was not there. I also felt if I would have gone to the authorities and had reported something, I don't know what it is I'm reporting. I can't say he did anything. I didn't know at the time. So I just said to myself, I was dealing with so much at that point of my life, whether it be divorce, custody, issues related to other things. I didn't need to complicate my life further and add this extra issue. Unless I'm sure, I'm not going to seek help. I have to be 100% sure, and I was not. So I just choked it up to his being egotistical. It was always a question in the back of my mind, but I don't think I was ready to handle it. So I just pushed it aside and I ignored it. I maintained my composure. And whenever he spoke to me or asked me a question, I was able to be happy and friendly with him. It was fine. He knew something was wrong, but I don't think he knew 100%. I didn't know what happened, and he actually filmed it, which we later discovered during this legal process. Later on, about 5 months later, Green had been fired. He was given a lie detector test by the owners, and he failed it. He actually asked for a second test, and he failed that again, a second time. That's when they fired him. So he was no longer a part of my case anymore. There was a whole bunch of new ones that came into the picture towards the end of 2018. There was a lot of PI still, but definitely not as aggressive. Later in the year of 2018, December, I thought about reaching out to my husband and letting him know what was going on. A part of me knew that if he understood what went on, he would be so upset. I just was unsure of how to go about doing that. He had ignored my Facebook attempts. I was trying to reach out to him, but unfortunately, I didn't know if he was my enemy at that point. He was actually my savior in the end.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I told many of my lawyers and my husband, I don't believe that he even has a recording. He would have given it. He was probably using that time to condense a 13, 14 minute video into 60 seconds. He gave us eventually a minute video that he recorded. We had to go through bringing this 60 second video, which we thought was the only video, to law enforcement. We went to the DA, we were ignored. I tried everything, all angles, but nothing.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.